This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, I'm here with Jim Treesice. How are you, Jim?
I'm just terrific, thanks.
Excellent. You're the president of the New York Grape and Vine, is that right?
New York Wine and Grape Foundation, yes.
What is that you guys do?
Well, we represent all New York grape growers and wineries and even grape juice producers, and all means 260 wineries in New York State, over 1,000 vineyards, and some large grape juice producers like Welch's that's known around the world.
Sure, I drink Welch's not every day, but pretty much.
Well, then your heart is beating very well.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Excellent. So what is the New York viticulture scene like?
It's very interesting. New York is actually one of the oldest but newest wine regions in the United States. Obviously, we're one of the oldest regions because the Europeans, you know, came to our side of the continent. And actually, it was 400 years ago that Henry Hudson from England sailed out of Amsterdam and discovered the Hudson River, which is now one of the wine regions that we have. Base of the Hudson River is New York City, which, of course, flows into the Atlantic. If you go north up the Hudson River, you have the Hudson River Valley wine region. That's one of our five wine regions. And then also to the east of that by about 100 miles, 60 kilometers, or I'm sorry, 160 kilometers, is the Long Island region. On the tip of Long Island, it's actually the closest region to Europe. And then far away from that to the west is the Finger Lakes region, where most of the wines are made. We have over 100 wineries there and about 80% of our total production. And then further west still, right near Niagara Falls, near Buffalo, is the Niagara Escarpment. And then finally is the Lake Erie region on the southern border of one of the Great Lakes, Lake Erie. So we have five major American viticultural areas, and within those there are four more sub-regions.
Okay, and what are the sub-regions? Long Island's got two.
Long Island has two. One is the North Fork of Long Island. The other is the Hamptons, Long Island, which is the playground of the rich and famous.
Yeah, Sex in the City and
there,
all that.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the Finger Lakes region, the largest region, there are two sub-appellations named after two of the lakes, Seneca Lake and Cayuga Lake.
Okay, and then the others, Lake Erie. Lake Erie, I remember from a horror movie somewhere. I don't know why. Was it famous in a horror movie?
I'm not sure about that, but it could have been some bad fish or something. But the wines are good.
You talked about the regions. American system's called AVAs, isn't it? What's that for?
Yep, and it stands for American Viticultural Area. So it's a specific region that has certain soil and temperature characteristics.
And are the wines supposed to represent a particular style from there, or is it more an association body? Like in New Zealand, for example, they have a thing called GI, Geographical Indicators.
Right.
Very, very loose, hardly any controls in it. And then you go to maybe the extreme, which is Appellation Control in France, which is very structured and very rigid. How does the AVAs fit in with that?
We're more like New Zealand's. In other words, the whole idea of the American Viticultural Area, which our federal government administers, is to give consumers information about where the grapes were grown. So that if a bottle of wine has one of those areas on it, let's say Seneca Lake or the Hamptons, Long Island, then at least 85% of those grapes, the grapes in that wine, have to be grown in that particular area. So it's not necessarily stylistic, but it is geographic, so people know exactly where the grapes came from.
All right. And if you get a change in soil types, does it change the AVA, or is it?
No, it doesn't change the AVA at all. I mean, in the Finger Lakes, for example, which were carved up by glaciers, we have soil types, you know, acre by acre. So it's not something that's consistent across the whole region.
Okay, looking at the maps of the Finger Lakes, you can see where it was probably glaciers, was it, that were coming down?
Yeah, 10,000 years ago, the Pleistocene era. And it was basically these glaciers that came from north to south, and they dug these huge trenches. There were actually 14 lakes all together.
There's a lot of fingers.
There's a lot of fingers, that's right. That's three hands. And but the wine region itself is around three of the major ones and a couple minor ones, so that Seneca, Cayuga, and Cayuga Lakes are the major ones, and Skinny Atlas and Kinesis as well. So the region is larger than the wine region, but it's a great wine region because of the lakes. Without the lakes, the temperature would be too cold for us to grow the grapes.
Sure. Actually, talking about the grapes and the temperature, we tasted some of your wines just before, and they seem to be quite aromatic, cool climate varieties like Riesling, Pinot Gris. So a wee bit of Sauvignon Blanc in there. But you're also experimenting a bit with Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot as well. So there's some, it's a real, it seems to be quite a range of grape varieties for different climates.
Yes, it's very eclectic, and actually we do have several climates. I mean, all of New York is certainly considered a cool climate region, but our warmest region and sunniest region is Eastern Long Island. I mean, it's, Long Island is literally a Long Island. It's about 100 miles long that juts out into the Atlantic Ocean, and so it's surrounded by water. So in the winter, when other parts of the state might be cold, the ocean keeps Long Island much warmer, and it has a lot of sun and so forth. So that's where our most common red wines come from. Merlot is one that Long Island specializes in. Now, when you go to the upstate region, the Finger Lakes, which is the largest region, you have the smaller lakes, and they do moderate the temperature, but it is colder there. So that's where we have the aromatic white wines, Riesling in particular, but also Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris, and others as well.
I imagine you're starting to get a bit altitude as well, if you've got ex-glaciers up there.
Yes, yes. There is a lot more altitude, obviously, than Long Island. So it's and what's interesting is that the way the glaciers dug out the lakes is they pushed all the rocks and soil from north to south. So the northern end of the lakes, the surrounding land is relatively flat. It's almost Long Island. But as you go to the southern end of the lakes, you get these very steep hillsides because that's where all of the earth was pushed.
Okay, interesting. We talked a wee bit about a couple of grape varieties, but I noticed a list of grapes that are grown in New York State, and it seemed to have pretty much everything in there. It's got all sorts of stuff, you know, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet Merlot, Cabernet Franc. But then you're into all sorts of weird things like Concord, Civil Blanc, perhaps pretty thing. But you've got other things like Delaware, Niagara. We even tried a wine earlier, but it's not on the list here. Rice. What was that? The
Arcazzatelli. Yes.
Arcazzatelli. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There seems to be quite a lot of unusual grapes. What's the history of grape varieties in New York State?
Well, it's fascinating. You know, one of the great things about New York City is its diversity. You know, you have populations from all over the world, all kinds of languages, customs, cultures, and so forth. And our wine industry kind of reflects that as well. We have a great diversity of grape varieties, much more so than almost any wine region in the world. And we started out with what we call the Native American varieties, Labrusca. So Concord, like you have in your Waltz's grape juice, Catawba, Niagara. These are very aromatic, fruity wines that a lot of people still really love. But wine connoisseurs rarely, you know, drink them. So
what did you call it? It's Vitis Labrusca?
Vitis Labrusca. Labrusca. Yep. And, so those were the ones that grew naturally in upstate New York. And then in the
good natural resistance to phloxera as well.
In natural resistance to phloxera, very cold hardy. So you didn't have to worry about a really cold winter. They would always survive the winter.
And were they there when Hudson arrived? Were there wild grapes in New York when
there were? There were. And in fact, you know, they were, you know, just celebrating because of all the wild grapes growing on the hillsides. The problem was the wild grapes didn't make very good wine. But what it did say is that, you know, you could cultivate grapes in that area. And so they started creating new breeds of grapes. So there was the first wave that was already there, the Concord, Niagara, Delaware, the Labrusca varieties. And then the French, in response to the phylloxera epidemic, they created all the hybrids,
yep,
like Sauvignon Blanc and Vidal and Rayon d'Or and so forth. And those were imported to New York. So that was the second wave. And what they did is they combined the hardiness of American vines with the taste characteristics of European wines. And then finally, a couple of Europeans, a Frenchman, Charles Fournier, rather, and a Russian, Dr. Constantine Frank, they brought the Vitis vinifera, the European wines, to New York amidst a lot of skepticism. People said, no, you cannot grow these here. It's too cold. And Dr. Frank said, wait a minute, I was growing these in the Ukraine. It's cold there as well. And so if I can do it there, I can do it here. And the two of them proved that you could grow great Rieslings and even Cabernet Sauvignon in their climate.
I had quite a decent Merlot early.
Yeah,
I thought that was very good.
If you do it right, you know, there are certain cultural practices in the vineyard that you have to do for them to survive the winter. But
do you have to rake soil over the roots.
That's exactly right. You have to cover the roots every year. So it's more labor intensive. But the thing is, it can be done. And especially with varieties like Riesling, the aromatic whites, the region is just perfect for it. And so now we become famous for it.
The Rieslings, I thought, when we tasted them were, whilst we didn't taste mean, I think it was only about three or four Rieslings, but they did have a real stone fruit characteristic, which to me implies that it is quite warm, you know, even more warm than, you know, the absolute extreme of what Riesling needs.
Yeah. Our harvest seasons are almost always as wonderful. You know, it's the end of summer, so the nights are getting cooler, which is great for the flavor. But the, you know, there are warm, sunny days, and so the ripening, you know, happens very, very quickly, and you do get, you know, really great ripeness, and so you have a nice balance of the sugary acid and pH, and Rieslings that are winning gold medals all over the world.
What style, because when we tasted the Riesling and the Pinot Gris and the aromatics, there seemed to be a range of styles from quite dry through to quite sweet. In fact, we even had a late harvest Vidal earlier. But what's the favorite style, and where are the wines sold?
The favorite style at this point is, in terms of Riesling, would be an off-dry style. Not totally bone dry, not sweet, but somewhere in between. Have a little bit of, you know, a lot more aroma and so forth. But we also have a lot of, you know, the traditional, the drier wines, the Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blancs, and others as well, especially from Long Island. And the reds, the Merlot is the one that we make the most of. Cabernet Franc has a lot of possibility as well. And we have all of the other varieties that we started with long ago. Where are they sold? Predominantly at the wineries themselves, and therefore in the regions, in the tasting rooms. And we get over 4 million visitors a year to the wineries in New York State. It's one of the largest areas in terms of visitation. And so for the wineries, the best thing they can do is sell directly to the customer. And so probably 75% of the wine of the small wineries is sold directly to the customer in the tasting room. The rest of it, by and large, is either within the region or certainly within New York State. So we do have a small export program, which is why we're here. And this is a great, great show that we always participate in.
We're at the London International Wine Fair at the moment.
But most of the wines are sold within New York State.
Okay. Do you export to other states? Because I think it's probably easier to export to the UK than it would be to another American state.
You're right. You know, we're still suffering from the legacy of prohibition, so that the United States is actually 50 different countries when it comes to selling wine. It's preposterous, and it's shameful that was the way our government left it. But no, it is easier to export to the UK than it is to Pennsylvania, which is just south of us. So there are a few wineries that have enough production and staff that they can fill out all the paperwork and pay the taxes. But we actually look to export markets sooner than we look to other states.
How much wine is produced in New York, bottles, or do you have a rough idea?
Yeah, about 200 million bottles a year are produced in New York. No, it is. We have good production. Obviously, in the United States, California is in a league of its own, 90% of total production. Washington State is second to California, but very much on a par with New York, and we're very much, pretty much equal to Washington.
What wineries do you recommend I should keep an eye out for from New York?
Well, one of the most famous that has good wines across the board and a quantity of production that's sufficient that they, you know, they're distributed pretty well, it's called Dr. Constantine Frank, Dr. Frank. And he was the Russian viticulturist who showed you could, you know, grow Riesling and Cabernet Sauvignon in upstate New York. So that's a label that you can always count on that has reasonably good distribution. Others include Anthony Road Winery, Lakewood Vineyards, and Chateau Lafayette Renault, Wagner. So there are a handful. There are 5 to 10 that not only can you count on, but they have adequate distribution.
Okay then, Jim. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.